don't fall in love with the plan. You will be taken, and more likely than not, it might go exactly the way you planned, but more often it's going to take turns that you would have never conceived. When you do that, you're giving up on the dream. I don't care how much you follow the rules. If you don't see a way and you let that block, then it won't happen.
Welcome to Not in a Huff with Jackson Huff, where we interview newsmakers, storytellers, and all-around interesting people. Sit back, relax, unless you're driving, and enjoy the show. Here's Jackson.
Hello. I am Jackson Huff. This is Not in a Huff. Thanks so much for joining me. As always, really appreciate it. This week, speaking with Bill DeBarba. Now, Bill wrote a book. He's kind of an interesting guy. Obviously, he's interesting. He wouldn't be on, but he's interesting in the life that he's led. He owned a business for a great many years. He's going to talk about exactly what that business did. That's not really what we talk a ton about. We talk about the book that he wrote, basically telling people about following your dreams. So there's a lot more to it, and I don't really want to give a blurb and kind of shortchange exactly what he's going to talk about. But, you know, he talks about how he always dreamt of living in Arizona, and kind of the stars aligned, and now he's living in Arizona for 30-plus years. We're going to talk just about the reason that he decided to write a book. You know, I don't have self-help people on very often, but I think Bill did a really good job of just laying out his thoughts. And hey, if you're interested in hearing it, then I think you're going to learn a ton. It's more just about kind of finding that purpose, and it's about kind of getting everything in your life organized, your thoughts, your feelings, your actions. And if you have them all streamlined into one area, you're normally more successful. You know, he talks about how a lot of people, you know, they're thinking one thing, but their actions are not following that. They're feeling something, but they're not letting kind of their thoughts follow that. You know, I said I wasn't going to go into it, but I've already kind of done that. Really great conversation. Urge you to stick around till the end of this conversation. A little bit of update when it comes to this podcast. So look forward to catching you at the end. But first, here's Bill DeBarba. Mr. DeBarba, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, sir?
I'm good. I'm going to let you do the heavy lifting right out the gate. Just introduce yourself.
Well, my name is Bill DeBarba. I born and raised in Massachusetts, came to Arizona many years ago, fell in love with it, started my own business. That went on for 40 years. And I am a pilot. I've got an engineering degree. I spent time in the Air Force. And that's just a few of it. But you don't have enough time for me to go through all of the details. However, I did end up writing a book, and the book came about a lot because of what I experienced in the business that I owned. And it gave me some tips as to how to go forward with it.
As I always say, we're going to unpack a ton of that. I want to kind of start just with a simple question. You said that you were started in Massachusetts. You lived in Arizona for a good long time. What brought you out to Arizona? Was it a job? I mean, Massachusetts is, I mean, the whole East Coast, I would say, is a very different place than Arizona.
What brought me to Arizona was the United States Air Force. I graduated from college in 1970. There was still a draft. Vietnam War was still going on, tail end of it. I joined the Air Force because I wanted to be a pilot. I wanted to fly those really sexy F-4s. But they had too many pilots. People were coming back. The war was winding down. So I went ahead and I got a private license. But I didn't want to come to Arizona. To me, this is a gigantic desert. I didn't think there was anything here that I would be interested in. And of course, you know, I still had the image of John Wayne pulling up to the bar with the guns blazing, you know, that kind of thing. Well, what a surprise when I got here. I mean, I've never been to a place that's had so much variety. You've got the major city here. You've got the deserts out to the south in Yuma. You drive north into beautiful rock formations and parks in Sedona. And then you go to the Grand Canyon. And that is, I don't have the words to describe that. So that's when I decided I really want to live here. But I couldn't get a job right away. So I went back to the job I had in Massachusetts after I got out of the Air Force, because they had to give it to me since I'd gone in the military. And I had this 5-year plan. And here's what I was going to do. I was going to get, because see, they weren't hiring engineers much in Arizona. The war was winding down, defense industries were laying off. So I said, I'll go back here, I'll get 5 years experience at Western Electric, which doesn't exist anymore. And then I will apply for jobs because the economy will cycle, it always does. And I'll go back and I'll find a job in Arizona. I was in for 1 year. I got a headhunter call from another company in Massachusetts. They needed someone who was working on exactly what I was working on at Western Electric. And I went to interview, and the first question they asked was, are you willing to relocate? And I said, well, it depends. What are you talking about? And they said, well, we need you in our plant in Phoenix, Arizona.
Like, kismet.
That was what I called a coincidence and good luck and all of the stuff. But with further study, I said, no, it's not. There's more to it than that. And that's part of what I wrote the book about.
I love that for sure. And I guess the last question I have about geography is we talked about the vast difference between the East Coast and Arizona back definitely in the 70s. Now that you've been in Arizona forever, I feel like Arizona from the 70s to what it is now, it's a pretty big difference too. So how do you feel about those transitions as well?
Well, it's like any other city that grows. It grows with population. People are coming here in the wintertime. Obviously, they don't want to get out of the cold weather. And the places that I used to be able to get back and forth to easily are not that easy to get back and forth to. I think one of my biggest disappointments is Sedona has really gone overboard, and it's just incredible number of people that have moved there. So a lot of the real natural places that I was very much in love with, really enjoyed. They have kind of gone away. So that much I miss. But the Grand Canyon, first time I saw the Grand Canyon was in the cockpit of a Cessna 172. And as I turned over the top of that, I didn't have the words to describe it. I mean, for me, it was almost like a spiritual experience. It was incredible. And that was pretty much the point of where I made up my mind I was going to come back when I saw that. But it has grown, and there is the benefits and the disadvantages of growth that any city has.
Yeah, just like anything for sure. I want to get to kind of the entrepreneurial spirit. We talked about some of the jobs you had, but you at some point decided to start a business yourself, and I guess you kind of call it that you started it in the back bedroom. You had a back bedroom office. What's that mean, and what kind of thing did you get yourself into?
Well, I was about in my late 20s and I still knew everything. I knew everything at that point. And I decided that the people who had me employed weren't smart enough and I was going to start my own business. I had taught myself how to program. I had a Radio Shack TRS-80, top of the line stuff. And I decided I was going to start doing software for people because in those days, the only software out there were word processing, spreadsheets, some basic accounting, and that was about it. If you wanted software specific to your business, you had to have somebody write it for you. And that's the business I got into. And I started working on it, and it was amazing. Every job I finished, somebody recommended me to someone else. And that job would be a little tougher. I had to learn some new things to do that one. And the thing started to grow, and I needed more room. I needed secretarial help, not secretary, clerical help of some kind for a while. Then I needed a programmer, and then I needed support people. And as time went on, more and more software had been built for different industries. And I fell into working with staffing agencies. So the software I wrote were for temporary help agencies. I formed a relationship with ADP Payroll and connected my software to theirs. And I ended up getting leads from all over the country. I had twice as many customers in New York City than I did in Arizona. So it grew over a 40-year period. I had the business for 40 years before I finally said, it's time. And I sold
You're saying 40, not four, right?
it. 40.
Yeah.
40 years I did that. And then I said, enough.
Yeah, well, I feel like that's a pretty good run. Definitely if the run ended with you selling it and not it just meeting its demise, I think that's a good thing, right?
I considered it so, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So just in kind of figuring out your timeline. So we had you in the Air Force, and then you went to back to Western Electric. Were you doing these at the same time? Did you quickly leave Western Electric in your early 20s and start this company, or where are we at with this timeline?
Well, when I left the Air Force in my early 20s, I took the job that was offered to me by the people in Massachusetts, had the office there. So I worked at that for about 10 years before maybe 8 years, I don't know, something like that anyway, before I decided I was going to start my own business. So I was around 30, 31 years old when I began the business.
I got you. Now that makes sense. That makes sense. So I guess I want to quickly kind of transition into what you're doing now, and that is, you've written this book, so I want to get to that. But I guess to kind of tie in the work that you've done, I guess to give you some, I don't know, lack of better words, some credibility to have written this book. What about the work that you did made you, I guess, well versed into writing what you eventually wrote?
Well, one of the things that happens, I believe, like everybody else, I believe in coincidence and luck and whatnot. And so many things in my life happened. I mean, just coming to Arizona was just one. There were many things in my life that happened that I said, oh, that must be another coincidence, or this was good luck, and so on and so forth. And after talking to other people, I started to question that. And I started attending seminars with people like Deepak Chopra and Wayne Dyer and those kind of folks, and listening to what they had to say. And what they were saying was new to me. It was almost foreign. But then I started reading their books, and I started attending a church called Self-Realization Fellowship, which believes very much in the same kind of thing. You put out an energy, it draws similar things to you. And I know what that sounds like, but the fact of the matter is, that's what I believed in. You see, what happened was I reviewed my trail back to Arizona and I started thinking about it. I came back to Massachusetts. I went back to my engineering job. I was put in a specific area. Nobody asked me if that's where I wanted to go. It wasn't something I requested. We're just going to work you here. It had to do with quartz crystals, electronic circuitry, that kind of stuff. And I said, okay, that's where I'm going to work. But I'm going back to Arizona. Well, the headhunters who found me because I was doing that technology. And that's the technology they needed. And they happened to have the plant in Phoenix, Arizona. Suddenly I decided maybe this isn't just coincidence. Maybe the energy I put out to want to get back to Phoenix drove the circumstances that I called luck.
Yeah, and I had to. I every time I talk about this type of thing, I forget the word that I'm trying to see. So that's why I had to look it up. But yeah, I mean, what's the difference between, I guess, what you're talking about? And I mean, some people would just look at that and say, yeah, he wanted it, and he probably, and maybe that's exactly what you're saying. He wanted it, so he did little things that made that happen. And the word that I'm trying to say is, what makes what you're saying different than just like a self-fulfilling prophecy?
Well, that's what nothing,
Yeah.
not at all. A self-fulfilling prophecy is when you make a prophecy that you put energy into, that you focus on, you are drawing the people, places, circumstances into your life to do it. Now, I learned a lot about some of the specifics. For example, you have to believe it. If you just say, gee, I really like this, but deep down inside, you don't think it's going to happen, it's not going to happen. You have to believe it, you have to know it. There is a quote from the Bible, which I don't have in front of me, but it basically says, if you for that for which you pray and desire, know that you have received it and it will be granted to you. It's in that knowing that the circumstances come around. The number of times the people I've talked to, the situations I've heard, it's like, this can't be just some kind of blind thing that, oh, just a coincidence. It's too much. There's too many people that have seen it, that have experienced it. And the purpose of my book is to use that type of a procedure, that type of an approach with the three things that make you who you are, because there are only three. You have thoughts, feelings, and actions. There isn't anything else. Your whole life is some combination of those three things. Do you align them or do you let them go in all different directions? That's what makes the difference. And that's what the book is about.
And I want to get kind of the overview of the book. But before we get to that, given what you just said, I'm gonna ask you a very pointed question before we dive back out. So let's think of the people who are listening to this and say, yeah, that sounds great. You will something to happen. You do everything you can to make something happen. You believe it with every fiber of your being, your every core of your soul. You think this is going to happen, and then nothing ever happens. And then people just feel like, well, that was just a big old waste of time. I can dream, hope, and wish until I'm blue in the face, and I'm still stuck in this dead end job, or I'm still not where I want to be in relationships. What do you say to those type of things?
Well, I would say one thing that you want to be very careful that you don't ask the dream killer question. The dream killer question is how? How is this going to happen? I don't see any way that I'm going to be able to get a job in Phoenix, Arizona with what I'm doing here in Massachusetts. How is that going to happen? When you do that, you're giving up on the dream. I don't care how much you follow the rules and you put the stuff on cardboard and do it in red and you do drawings and you study and think and read. If you don't see a way and you let that block, then it won't happen. What I've learned how to do is I make plans. I definitely make plans. I made my 5-year plan to come back to Arizona, but it didn't come out that way. And it worked in a totally different way than I had thought. So you have to be aware of the fact that make your plans, get started, take some action, because that's a big part of the dream. You know, if you think about it and you write notes and you tell people about it and you meditate on it and you do all of those things, that's fine. That's good. But if you don't start with something, you're not convincing yourself, your subconscious, whatever you want to call it, you're not convincing it that you really mean it. And so you put a plan together. But what I tell people in my lectures and in the book, don't fall in love with a plan. You will be taken, and more likely than not, it might go exactly the way you planned, but more often it's going to take turns that you would have never conceived. And so you go with that or you follow it and you pay attention to that. Because if you say, no, 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 this is my plan. Can you imagine my telling those guys in Massachusetts, sorry, I can't go to Arizona now. I got a 5-year plan. I have to follow my 5-year plan. No, you don't want to do that. But most people lose the track of their dreams because we are practical Americans. We have to know how. How is this going to happen? I need to know if I do steps A, B, C, and D, I'm going to get there. And I'm missing steps B and C. I have no idea how that's going to happen. Focus on that and you take away all the energy.
Are you saying that you can never put any kind of timeline on it? I mean, that makes it a little bit where, you know, I guess your theory would never completely go away because you could be like, well, it's only been 46 years. Maybe it's going to take 50 years. So, I mean, there's got to be some kind of timeline, right?
Yeah, there is. And I don't know what it is. Okay. Because what I've learned in this and my getting into my business, I gave you a very brief introduction. There were a number of steps, including a business I bought that I was going to build up, sell, and be able to launch my business from. And that went bankrupt. And that business had nothing to do with anything I really wanted to do. It was just simply a hard work. You know, you work hard and you do your job and whatnot. I'm first generation American. My parents came from Italy. This was how you did things. You just worked hard. Nobody cared if you liked it or not. You just do the hard work. Well, there were things I had to learn. I had to go through, because I can tell you starting the business, that wasn't my plan. But I had to go through the bankruptcy, the trying to put things back together again, to learn how important it was to have a deep desire, feeling, want to be able to do something. Your subconscious is going to take you down a path that may not seem like it's going in the right direction, but there may be some things you need to learn if you're going to be successful in what you're trying to do. Again, trust the process.
Yeah. Well, the thing I want to say before we even go any further, I've interviewed probably 300 people. At least 100 of them have written books, and probably over half of those I get through the whole interview without ever saying the name of the book. That's it. I'm a terrible podcast host when it comes to that. Tell us the name of your book.
The name of the book is The Process of Living.
I want you to go into a little bit more depth about that process. You already talked about how it's thoughts, feelings, and actions. How do we make sure that we're controlling all aspects of that process?
A lot of it is just paying attention. A lot of it is realizing that they are connected with each other. But what makes it tough is they're three totally different things. Think about your car. You've got steering, you've got engine, you've got transmission, you've got more than three. You've got a whole bunch of things that all do totally different tasks, but all have to work together for the car to take you anywhere. There has to be a connection for all of those things to work. If you don't pay attention to the connections of the three parts, then you could be thinking one thing and feeling something else and doing something else that are not in sync with each other. What I tell people all the time is, of the three, they're all important, but of the three, feelings have the most power. And the reason they do is because they're always honest. You can think anything you want to think. You can do any activity you want to do. But your feelings, you can try and kid yourself, but your feelings are real. And if what you're doing, action, if what you're thinking is in line with those feelings, then you've got a power that most people don't realize. Why do you think the dreams don't come true for so many people? Because they don't understand that you have to have that in place. I have to tell you a funny story, and it's a true story. I was still working in my job, and you know, like any software, there's always going to be something that has to be fixed or adjusted or whatever. And most of the time when the client would call, they might be a little nervous because they need to get their payroll out and things weren't working the way they thought, but they would work with us. But every once in a while, I would get somebody who would get on the phone with me, start yelling at me, calling me names, telling how bad my software is, using words that I will not share with you right now. And absolutely, I mean, I'm listening to this and I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, I'm the only person, or my team are the only people that can help you. And you're talking to me like this. Now, does that make any sense? And finally, I mean, fortunately for them, I'm a nice guy. So I would let them go ahead and talk, and I didn't hang up on them, and then I didn't get into an argument with them. I just waited till they took a breath, and I'd say, okay, now, can you tell me what the problem is? Let's start there. And more often than not, it was something simple, or maybe it was a user that wasn't trained properly, and you would get their things going. And you know what? The people that did that became my most loyal clients. They wouldn't leave me because that I saw through them and let them do that without turning them away. So that's what I'm talking about. What's different there? What's the difference? He's got feelings. That person has feelings, and those feelings are fear. I'm not going to make payroll. My temps will go on to somebody else if I don't make payroll on time. But his actions and thoughts are anger. They're working against each other. And that's the kind of thing that happens, so not that dramatic, but that's the kind of thing that happens so often in our lives, that even when we're trying to either gain a goal or get rid of something in our lives that's not working, you know, the same process is used to overcome alcoholism, drugs, smoking, any of those kinds of things. Now, there are other, processes for that, and they're wonderful. I'm not putting that down in any way. But using this, using the process of aligning these things and getting them focused in the same direction, very powerful.
Yeah, no, for sure. I like that. I like that example a lot. I think that brings it home for sure. And I want to kind of ask you just anything. We've already kind of played devil's advocate a little bit, but those who are truly trying to stick with the process that you're laying out, even they are going to run into challenges, they're going to run into roadblocks when it comes to making it a success. What are some of the common roadblocks that you see, and how do we overcome them?
Well, the roadblocks are kind of what I said earlier. You've got things you need to learn. a lot of the goals that you wanted to go for, you may not be ready for. You may need training. I don't mean in the classic sense, but life training. That before you can get to this, you have to have a different approach. You have to learn some things that you didn't realize you had to learn. And a lot of times what happened is the goal is a feeling. The thing is what drives the feeling. Sometimes it will happen that it turned out to be something else that gave you the feeling that you were hoping for the first thing that you started with. And that's not that unusual because your subconscious, your whole inner workings are going after the feeling. Now, I would say more often than not, the thing that you want to get to, my coming to Arizona, I can't imagine what else would have done it for me. But there's a lot of times when you will be going after something because you're anticipating how good it's going to feel if I just had this, if I were able to do that, if I could get this kind of a job. Well, the fact is that there are going to be times when the thing that you get that's going to give you the feeling wasn't the thing you originally thought. That's not a failure.
I guess something else I would think about too, most people are not kind of on this journey of life alone. So what happens when I guess a couple has a little bit different ideas and how do we align that? Let's say you really wanted to move to Arizona and your wife dreamt of staying in Massachusetts and being a an East Coaster her whole life. How do we mesh those things?
That's a hard thing to answer because it's done on an individual basis. There's going to be some, how much of the depth is there? How badly do I really want to come to Arizona? Now, I'm not suggesting that people should just get divorced because they don't agree on, one particular thing. So it could be something of, hey, I love this gal. She wants to go to Arizona. She obviously is passionate about it. I'd like to stay here. All right, let's give it a try. There's nothing to say we can't rent a place for a year or two and just see how it feels. And let's see if it works out. And maybe the person who thought that going to Arizona was going to be the thing turns out to be disappointed. And maybe the other person is saying, this is not so bad. Look, in any relationship, there's give and take. It's a question of how much are you willing to do. And
Yeah.
that is, and getting divorced sometimes is the only answer. Sometimes that's it. You're going to have to go your own way. So, they're the kinds of things that you can't anticipate, but that you have to trust that there's a reason why that you're going through them and going
Yeah.
to that goal. And you brought something up there that I want to talk about because it's very important. Environment is huge, particularly if your goal is to get rid of something that's not working for you. Environment is huge. If you are Let's say you and a bunch of friends go out to have drinks every night after work, okay? And you're finding yourself doing this a little too much and you decide, I can't do this. Well, if you decide, okay, I'll go with them, but I just won't have any drinks, you're kidding yourself. It's not going to work. Environment is critical. If you want to change the direction you are going and the environment you're in is drawing you to a different direction, you have to change the environment. Because environment is stronger than willpower. If you're going to be going this way and you're doing things to take you this way, or you're in with groups of people or circumstances that take you this way, you have to find a way to get in a different environment in order to move the way you want to go. This is true in anything, but it's especially true when you're using the goal setting process to eliminate something in your life that isn't working for you.
Yeah, it was, I guess the most telling part of this entire process is that I can kind of see you using it yourself in a different way, and that is with the actual book. Realizing a process is not working and changing it. It's pretty difficult to realize that, definitely after you've written a book, but that's exactly what you did. I heard that you wrote this book, had it come out, and then realized this was written not in the best way. I need to revise it. I need to rewrite this. Something to do with the woman's prison actually helped you decide that. So you actually used your own process of this is not the best way this could have been laid out, and you redid the whole book. Am I correct?
You are correct. And that goes back to what I was saying. You have to learn. I had to write that book. If I hadn't written the book to get it wrong, I would have never gotten the book right because I wouldn't have had a book to start with. I put the thing, I have an engineering degree. I put the thing together in a scientific kind of an approach that, and we don't have enough time for me to give you all the details about that. But the bottom line is, I had a lot of people come back to me and said, "Bill, I got to chapter 7 and I had to put it down. This was too complicated. I can't, that was the main thing. There were other changes that I needed to make too." So what did I do? I rewrote it and I took those scientific, technical kind of parts of the book and I moved them into an appendix. And when I got to that point, I said, "If you want to know more, go to Appendix A. If not, take my word for it, and let's just keep moving." And that's basically how, that was the main change I made. But I also made changes because of what I learned at the woman's prison. That was an experience. And the feedback I got and the stories that I heard, because I never asked, you never asked anybody, "How did you get here and what did you do?" You don't do that. But there were some that would talk to me afterwards and give me some of those stories. And it was really interesting to put my speech together. I just did one for Unity Church. I gave a speech at one of their meetings, about 80 people. That was easy because we come from about the same lifestyle, middle class, law-abiding citizens, worked hard, retired or not. Now I'm talking to people who went to prison, who were dealing in drugs, who committed some other kind of robbery or whatever. Other kind of crimes. I had to adjust how I spoke because if I said it in the way that I would speak to this other group, they would have gone blank on me. So it took me a long time to create my presentation differently than I had been presenting it before. And that change of presentation also played into the second revision of the book. That brought in a lot. I learned a lot. That was a real learning experience. And that also went into the book.
And I've said it before because my day job is in higher education, and we actually have programs within some prisons. And the thing that I've learned, because I'm kind of in charge of that particular aspect, is that, for lack of a better word, I always thought that, okay, we're going to have to kind of really change everything into a way that makes it more, I don't know, digestible, more layman's term. And that's not the case at all. I mean, the thing that I learned, and what, the warden said too, right out the gate, is that what you're going to find is a lot of these people are probably 10 times brighter than most of the people that you already deal with. It's not easy doing some of the things that they've done. So if we can just move things into a positive thing, if we can transfer that energy into good, I mean, it's scary. I think that some of these people could rule the world for sure.
I agree. I met some very interesting people. And the program and the prison system, at least this one, Perryville Prison in Arizona, they recognize that. The same thing you're saying. They recognize that. And they had this because of the basically recidivism. I mean, people were going out, coming back in over and over. They put together people that they knew or felt, I can't know, but they felt could make a real success of themselves. Just for the reasons you're saying. They have the IQ. They've done difficult things to get themselves in trouble. Exactly what you're saying. But what I was so impressed with is they picked these ladies out to go through the program, and those were the ones that went to my seminar. They did a lot of other things too. This was just one small piece of the whole program. But I remember when I was first meeting with the warden, actually, it was just one of the COs that I met with, and he kept referring to, as he was explaining to me what they were doing and so on, he kept referring to his clients. And I said, "The heck is he talking about? What clients?" It took me a while to realize he was referring to the inmates. He was referring to the ladies that were in this program. He was there to serve them. That, way beyond anything I did, or probably anybody from the outside did, had to have been the biggest influence to gain that kind of respect from the people who were in charge. So that's really what motivated me to get started in this, because I said, I want to be a part of this. This is very cool. I want to do something with this.
No, that's absolutely fantastic. I like that a lot. And I want to kind of, we've talked so much about kind of the process and what the whole book encompasses, but, and this is a tough question, I realize, but ultimately somebody picks up your book. What's the ultimate takeaway that you want them to get from it? Is it simply to have one goal and know how to achieve it? Is it changing their mindset for all future goals? What's the ultimate takeaway from reading the book?
The ultimate takeaway is that I have control of my life. Simple as that. Whether it's getting rid of something, gaining something, doing something, I don't care what it is. If I understand how this process works and I follow some basic guidelines, which, by the way, I can't take credit for. I mean, I'm taking stuff down, maybe in a different format, but from people that have made themselves famous for what they've done in this field. But that's the main takeaway. I can control my life, and here's a formula that's going to help me do that. Then you apply that. You can apply that to anything.
Yeah. So, I mean, you mentioned, you know, that you kind of realized the change that happened in your life because you were able to make moving to Arizona happen. And that was something that felt like more than just a coincidence, that you kind of willed that to happen. And that's kind of created that passion. But I guess I still want to know, what made you decide, you know, after 40 years in your business to write a book like this? I mean, engineer, somebody who created payroll software, doesn't necessarily always lend itself well to now a book telling people to take control of their life.
No, I mean, wait a minute now. You're discriminating here. Okay.
Oh, I am. I am. You tell me I'm wrong. I'm happy to take the beating.
You're assuming that someone who's technical is by definition not in line with this kind of thing. Well, I'm explaining to you that that's not the case, okay? Because part of it is technical. Part of it is understanding a process of things that happen, cause and effect. This is what you do in engineering all the time. It may be in engineering more on material things. But I guess to put it in a simple way, what you consider to be accidents, good luck, bad luck, whatever it is, you have the same control over that as you would having on doing some mechanical task. There's no real serious difference. The mechanism is different. But other than that, it's the same. So when I came to this, it was totally in line with how I thought as an engineer. There is a process. There is a way to do this. It happens to be in a totally different arena, but it's the same process. You take the steps, you follow them through, and sometimes you have to make adjustments. And I'm talking either way. Sometimes it didn't work the way you thought. Sometimes I got to go back to the drawing board and figure out how to do it. Either way, it's not that different.
Yeah, I mean, I asked you that a little bit in jest, so we could recap your entire journey. I mean, in actuality, I feel like it just takes anyone with that passion, because I don't know that I could tell you any one job that says, "Oh yeah, that is the person that's going to write this book." So yeah, I just hopefully you didn't take offense to that.
No, of course not. Of course not. And I want you to challenge me, because that's what I want people to hear. Is that this isn't, you know, you're not going to just soft pedal this all the way through. And that's, and by the way, you're not the first to ask those questions.
All right.
But the, you're absolutely right. Those kinds of things have to be more than just warm feeling, sitting out and meditating in the woods and so on and so forth. Not that meditating is a bad thing. It's a good thing, but in a lot of other ways too. But it isn't just about that. It's every bit as scientific as it is making any kind of a high-tech device that you would make. It's that same scientific. Here are the tools. Here how you use them. Apply them to what you're trying to build. The same thing.
Yeah. Well, I guess you want me to challenge you. Here's my biggest challenging question. Like I've mentioned before, I don't have a ton of people on that you know, kind of have those books that tell people, you know, how they should potentially do things. But when I, you know, I've had people on that talked about how to be successful, and sometimes, you know, your career doesn't have to be what you love if you're eventually working towards the thing that you love. Had people on that talked about how to take ownership of your life through leadership. I've had people on that talk about all these different things. The market in the world of self-help, quote unquote, is pretty saturated. So my question is, why should they read your book? Why is the way that you're laying things out worth a look?
Well, I'd say the basic simple answer to that question is, I'm not trying to tell you what to do. I'm trying to give you the tools to do whatever you want to do. This is basically, look, here are the steps. Apply it to anything. I'm not saying you should work toward a promotion to be in a leadership position with a group of people in a particular business. If that's what you want, fine. Here are some of the steps. Here are the steps that you can use to move in that direction. So I'm not in my book trying to say you need to correct yourself in these ways. I'm not saying that if you want these goals, these are the specific steps you have to take, because it's going to be different. It's going to be different from anyone. All I'm saying in my book, and I'm not the only one, and when I say it's different, there are others that are doing it very similar than I am too. All I'm really saying is, here are the tools. Here's how they work. Here's how to coordinate them so that they're all pushing in the same, or pulling, whatever, in the same direction. Now go apply that to whatever you want, whatever's true for you. But before I forget, there was something you said earlier about, what if I make this great dream and it never happens, okay? Mm-hmm. I give an example in the speeches that I give. If you decide that you want to get your first home and you're going to buy Bill Gates' old $500 million mansion, that's probably not going to happen. I don't care how you use the tools. And the main reason why is, you don't really believe that. What you're trying to go after has to be within your core of belief. I want my first home. There are some homes in this nice little neighborhood that aren't overly expensive. They're kind of small, maybe 1,500 square feet, you know, that kind of thing. I can believe that that's possible. I can believe that I could see myself living in that. That's the kind of goal. Now, later on, you may, oh, I've done that, I can go to the next step. It has to be, the goal has to be within your belief. So what happens a lot of times, besides asking the how question, which stops a lot of people, the other problem is, when you go after a goal, or you say you're going after a goal, that's something you can't really picture yourself in, that it's beyond where you see you can possibly be. Back up. Go in the direction, but go a little further back. Start working toward it and build your confidence that you can work and get to that. It may take several steps.
No, I think that's powerful for sure. I think that's important to be able to, yeah. I mean, obviously you can, there's a difference between dreaming big and taking those steps to actually reach it. So I like that. I like that a lot. I guess in kind of wrapping things up, you know, you put a lot of passion into this book. You've even rewritten the book. Are you somebody who's, I guess, said what you need to say, or do you got more books in you?
You know, right at the moment, no, I don't. You know, people have said to me, don't you want to sell a whole bunch of these books? I say, yeah, somebody wants to buy a million copies, I'm more than happy to take care of that for them. But the fact of the matter is, with the self-publishing that's been out for years now, there's like 60 million self-published books out there, okay? My goal is to speak, as you may have gotten that idea here. My goal is to give presentations, like I did in the prisons, like I did at Unity Church, like I've done at St. Mary's Food Bank. I do it once a month for those people. In fact, I met a couple of people that I'd given the speech to when they were in prison. I got them at the St. Mary's Food Bank as well. And I'm doing these things because that's where I feel my personal strength is. Writing books is fine, and I got a lot of help from a lot of people because obviously I had no experience, and I'm very grateful to all of them. But that's not really my main ambition, is to put out a whole slew of books. I mean, I look at writers that have like 8, 10, 12 books. God bless them. I don't think I'm going to live that long. So what I want to do is, I might write something else. It's possible that I could come up with something else, but it's not on the horizon for me right now. My goal is to do more speaking. And I'm here with you because I want to do more speaking.
This is you being on this podcast is you following your own steps into that speaking world, right?
Precisely.
I
Precisely.
like it. Well, tell people how they can connect with you, how they can find the book, and any other connection points that you might want to shout out.
Well, I've got a website which is the same name as the book, theprocessofliving.com. There's all kinds of things in there. There are my blogs that I put in there, and I'd love people to read those because they really come from things that have motivated me, that I think about. I want to say this about it, and I put that out there. There are all kinds of connections to get in touch with me. There's a simple link to Amazon. There's something original. You click here, you're in Amazon, ready to buy my book. That's so all of that is there, I would say, and my contact information, including my phone number, obviously my email address. And I would encourage them to contact me. I would love to talk to people. And I get more from the people who say, I think this is a bunch of whatever. Those are the ones I get more from because they'll wake me up to things that I might have said differently, that I could do, that I could use in my presentations. But that would be the way. That would be the way to do it. And just remember, you have the control of your life more than people will let you know.
I really appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Thank you. I appreciate the time here with you.
So that was Bill DeBarba. Really, really appreciate his insight. Like I said in the beginning, I don't normally have a lot of people on that's quote unquote self-help, but I think that he kind of hits a nice sweet spot of talking about what worked for him and how he thinks it could work for others as well. Take it with a grain of salt. Take it and cherish it. That's up to you. If you do want to hear more about all of it, because I think we just kind of scratched the surface, go check out his book. The links to that will be in the show notes. Urge you to check that out for sure. Check out everything to do with all things Bill DeBarba. All of that will be in the show notes. Now let's get to I guess an update about this podcast. I've been doing this podcast for 4.5 years, a long time, and we're going to kind of go back to the roots of the podcast. We're going to go back to the beginning, and that's kind of a cop out a little bit, just because if you remember, if you've been around since the very beginning, first of all, bless you. Really appreciate you being a loyal listener. But when I first started, for the first few months, I released a podcast every 2 weeks, so I released two podcasts a month instead of every single week. And then things just got crazy, and I was interviewing so many people that I couldn't do two a month. If I did that, I would talk to somebody, and they would be released in 6 months. So I started releasing them every week. Well, I'm a busy guy. Some different things are changing, and I think I'm going to switch. I say switch back, but literally the first 5 episodes of this podcast, and now there's over 250. So can I say switch back? But switch back to every other week, just for ease for me, and also I think that'll be great, just because it'll allow me to just invite the cream of the crop guest. Everybody I've had on has been absolutely amazing, but I want to make sure that I'm bringing the best guest possible. And obviously quality sometimes means less quantity. So I really, really, really appreciate all the guests who have been on, and for the last 4 years, every week I've had amazing, amazing people, and that's not going to stop. It's just going to be every 2 weeks. Now, is that going to be forever? Maybe not. I mean, I wasn't able to stick with that last time, just because I was booking so many awesome people that I couldn't sustain that and not have a 6 month waiting list. So who knows? I've slowed down a little bit when it comes to heavy booking, but still a ton of people that want to come on. I've got half a dozen already lined up. So I do think There's not going to be any shortage of awesome guests, but for various reasons, lots of reasons, not necessarily that we have to dive deep into. I think it's best for at least a bit to do every other week. So we will see you next time in 2 weeks. And I really, really thank you for being here. If this is your first time listening, sorry you had to listen to all that. You've not known any different. But if you've been here a while or you listen to this one and you love it, go follow along on Instagram, on Spotify, on TikTok, on Apple. I mixed all those together. But on Apple and Spotify, go follow along or subscribe. Leave a 5-star rating. That helps a ton. Leave a written review on Apple. Helps even more. Go follow along on TikTok and on Instagram, Not Enough Podcast. We'll see you next time. Take it away, Chris.
This has been Not in a Huff with Jackson Huff. Thank you for listening. Be sure to join us next time where we will interview another amazing guest who is sure to make you laugh or make you think, or hey, maybe even both. But until then, keep being awesome.